You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. We're in here on May 2-4. It's a holiday Monday, and Blue Jays got blown out earlier this afternoon, and Vladdy Guerrero Jr. was not in the lineup. Load management for Vladdy, and people not happy about it. And I said in the previous hour, I would love to supply the first and only contrarian take in the city. Like, this is unanimous. No one can understand how this club could be so tone deaf and right. could not realize that you're actually going to have a crowd. You're not going to have many of these all year. It's a holiday. A lot of people probably watching the game, patios. He's on fire.
Your new shiny toy, AL Player of the Week. You wheel him out there.
And you don't play him today. I understand you got a schedule and you're playing a lot of games in a row. Sit him yesterday or sit him tomorrow. You play him today. I can't come up with that contrarian take.
No.
Gary, also known as
Jerry
from Woodbridge, texting in to 1050-50 saying, how about this for a contrarian viewpoint? Maybe Vladdy's insertion into the lineup would have made some of the difference, but ultimately not much because they were going to lose anyway because they're a bad club and the Sox are on fire.
Thanks, Tips. We all know that.
That's the whole point, Gary. It's never about wins and losses. It's not right. as if, oh, we knew we were going to lose, so let's pull Vladdy. They knew they were going to lose with or without Vladdy. Yeah.
Right.
It's not about Vladdy supplying them with the win. It's about Vladdy supplying you with some entertainment.
And exactly. Jerry, they're going to lose tomorrow, too.
Yeah, probably going to lose tomorrow.
Well, they may win one.
I don't know. The Sox are on fire right now. The Jays are, you know.
That's a struggle.
They're not a very good team. So anyway, that's what has kind of the city buzzing right now. And someone else texting in here, Harold. Harry, yes. texting and saying,
A.K.A. Jerry.
A.K.A. Jerry. I took my wife and our three kids to the game today, bought five level two tickets to see so the kids could see Vladdy play, and was shocked he wasn't in attendance. Never again. What a slap in the face to those of us who, for some reason, continue to support this club. It's over. Won't happen again for me and my family. Well, I'm not sure I believe that, because if they turn the corner in a couple of years and
Vladdy's
on fire, I feel like you're probably going to buy tickets and get down there. I think they know that. They take advantage of that. They understand right. there's going to be a lot of grief and a lot of hot takes and a lot of anger today. They'll get over it.
But to that point, you know there's going to be sad people for going through this lean stretch. How many years is it going to be? Probably 3-4 years, potentially.
Probably,
let's just say 3 years. In case, you know, Vladdy and some of these young kids come up and really make an impact. Why not reward the fans? This is reward today.
This is your platform. You're only going to have so many.
That's
you're going to have
I mean.
Opening day, his home debut, and the holidays.
Right. Yeah.
And it's the Sox. It's not like it's some brutal team. There's going to be some energy. There's probably going to be some Bostonians up here.
Right.
It should be a decent crowd.
It was a decent crowd.
It was. For them, it was a decent crowd. It really doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's a miss by them, and it's unfortunate. And I don't know if they care, but to me, somebody up the chain has to care. Like I it wouldn't surprise me if there's a long, hard conversation from somebody in upper management going, like, how did we
miss
this?
It's a PR disaster.
Yes.
It's a PR disaster. Raptors winning last night, though. I mean, that's where the majority of the focus is on in the city right now. It's the Raptors and Vladdy. Charles Barkley was in the house last night. We're going to call him. We believe he's coming on in a moment.
That's fantastic.
Charles and the TNT crew were in town last night, and I believe they're still here. I think they're sticking around until tomorrow night. And
you're going to ask about his golf game, too?
I don't know. You said you've been in tournaments with him, but you've never played with him.
No, it was like you get paired with people. We always would have the after festivities.
I know.
Didn't you say he used to be like a scratch golfer?
Not a scratch. I believe he was a low single-digit handicap, like a 6 or something. And something happened. I don't know if it was hitting a fan with a ball.
Well, let's not bring it up if it's like a traumatic
event or whatever.
Exactly. But
I had never heard that he used to be like a really solid golfer. I mean, if you're a 5 or a 6 handicap, you're making money.
Exactly.
We just did the karaoke on the Sunday night.
That was always your thing? That's where you would show up with him?
Yeah.
Those are the best, though.
Karaoke?
The last night of a tournament.
That's where the party starts.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, he's a Basketball Hall of Famer. I mean, what kind of introduction do you really need here?
Yeah.
From the NBA on TNT, he's in town, he's in Toronto. I'd like to believe he's enjoying himself. Here's Charles Barkley. How you doing, Charles?
I'm good, my brothers. How you guys doing?
We're doing very well.
Man, you know, I'm loving Toronto. I come up here every summer. It's a great place. Got my boy Leo Rowdens and Rod Black taking good care of me and Paul Jones. We're having a blast.
Yeah, those are our guys. When you bring the crew with you, though, like Shaq, we always talk, we always play your audio. And we can't figure out if you guys are buddies, if adversaries. I mean, how would you describe your relationship with Shaq in particular?
A combination of both. Number one, he's a great guy. I love working with him. But, you know, he gets mad at times when we're having basketball discussions and let me know he won 4 championships. That doesn't mean he's right on basketball. So we have fun. I like messing with him because he got thinner skin than Flat Stanley. We have a lot of fun at work, man. But I'm not going to back down because he's wrong or I'm wrong. I'm getting my point across. But I love working with the guy. He's a great dude.
Well, you've made that clear when it comes to like current players who really haven't been very fond of some of the heat you've been spitting at them over the years. And usually it's through, you know, local media. They'll say, I didn't like what Charles said, or I heard what Charles said. I think it happened recently with Joel Embiid, where you guys were critical, and understandably so. Have you had any players over your, you know, tenure as a media guy actually approach you face-to-face with any of these problems?
Oh heck yeah. Players, agents. But, you know, we got to do our job. I don't have any gripe against any of these players. But you got to do your job. I mean, I'm pretty sure you guys have to criticize certain players, but it's nothing personal. Yeah. I don't think anybody can say, go back and look at my entire career. I've never said anything personal about a guy. If a guy's not playing well, I'm going to call him out. And Joel, I think if he would sit back and hear what I said instead of listen, he would understand the point I was trying to make. He's got to get himself in better shape. You know, they don't practice him, so I told him, get in a swimming pool. You know, because you can get in great, because swimmers are some of the best conditioned people in the world. I said, if you're not going to practice basketball and you're hurt all the time, one of the ways you can actually work out is get in the pool. I think they should practice him a little bit. I mean, he don't have to run up and down the court for 2 hours, but if they said, hey, we're going to run up and down this court really hard for 10, 15 minutes, because like I said, you cannot get in shape not playing basketball. And he took it personally and got mad. But it's, like I say, he's a great kid. I think he's got a chance of being a great player if he can stay healthy. But like I say, it was nothing personal at all.
It's because it's the truth, Charles. And when you talk about an athlete, and that's always the old saying, the truth hurts. And when you talk about what they're doing and it's not right, they know that you're right, but they just have to take offense to it. And that's the way the world is now. The truth hurts, and that's why they get mad at it.
Well, it drives me crazy because, you know, listen, I'm not the old guy, get off my lawn. You know, I'm not one of those guys. But when guys criticize me back in the day, I had to take a step back and see if the criticism true. Like sometimes a lot of guys are just jackasses on TV in the States. You know, like a Skip Bayless and some guys like that. They just say stuff to get just for the hell of it for dramatic effect. I've never done that. I'm never going to do that. But these guys today, man, you can say great things about them, but if you say one bad thing about them, you think it's the end of the world. And I said the same thing about Embiid. I said, he's never called me when I told him how great he was. I say one thing about his condition, and he goes crazy. But these players never call you and say, hey, man, thanks for the kind word.
Never. They never do.
No. Well, and it's not going to happen.
And
you
got to be careful with the analytics crowd, too, Charles.
Oh, I hate the analytics crowd. I hate them. You know that now.
Put that on a tee for you.
No, because I made this point the other day. The Golden State Warriors have the three greatest shooter. Two is who live, and Kevin Durant is probably right in that conversation. Do you know that there's 7 teams shooting more threes than the Warriors? Now, that doesn't make sense to me. If you got the greatest three-point shooting team of all time, and you got seven teams to shoot more threes, and that doesn't make analytical sense to me. I'm a realistic guy. And the Warriors are actually shooting more twos than the teams that are left in the playoffs now. I wish a lot of these teams would stop trying to do the analytical stuff. Kawhi Leonard is one of the best, number one, he's one of two or three best players in the world, but he takes more twos than threes. And I wish the analytical crowd, listen, I know they had their little, when the Warriors won their first championship, they shot a lot of threes. Then they realized, like, well, we probably can't survive just shooting threes. And now you see there's no way humanly possible there should be seven teams in the NBA shooting more threes than the Warriors. But they don't have Steph, Clay, and Kevin Durant. So that means a lot. I wish they would pay attention to the actual numbers instead of saying, hey, we're just going to shoot all the threes we want to.
With Charles Barkley, the Raptors winning in double OT last night. You were in the building, and it's a quick turnaround. They play again tomorrow night, and I think the concern, I mean, people are happy in Toronto, clearly, because they got a win, and now you got a series. But load management has been the term of the season here in Toronto, and Kawhi is a guy who, you know, he's missed a lot of action. Last year he only played 9 games, and now you see him playing up over 50 minutes last night, and he's limping around a little bit. How concerned do you believe Raptors fans should be that he's going to be at 100% tomorrow and ready to go?
Well, I know they're keeping it tight to the vest over there. Listen, I hope he's healthy. I made no secret about it. I love coming to Toronto. I don't know who's going to win this series, but I just want another trip to Toronto next week, so I need the Raptors to win tomorrow. The guys, you know, I said it last night before the game. Hey, you can do all the X and O's you want to. Marc Gasol, Siakam, Powell, they really stepped up last night. That's all it took. It has nothing to do with analytics. It has nothing to do with X and O's. It's about Jims and Joes. And it was a very simple last night. Those guys played well last night. Gasol obviously had his best game. Powell obviously had his best game. Siakam has been missing mainly. He's been missing for the last 2 weeks. I was really proud of that kid last night stepping up in a must-win game. But they got to do it tomorrow because we don't have a series yet. You know, Ernie likes to say when they get back to 2-1, we have a series. No, we don't have a series yet. We have a series if the Raptors win tomorrow.
Well, if they do, how much belief do you have that they can get a game in Milwaukee?
Well, the Bucks, you know, they hadn't won. Think about it. You know, I know we're in the Eastern Conference Finals, but they hadn't won a series in 15 years, maybe longer than that. I think maybe 2001 was the last time they won a series. So this is uncharted territory for those guys. And you see their best player. I mean, he's a stud, but he struggled last night, but he's never been in this situation before. So you don't know. Like I say, you never know what's going to happen in the playoffs. Kawhi is the only one in this series who's been in the championship, I think. He won a world championship. So I just think tomorrow's game is a really big deal. I mean, that's not a surprise to anybody that's a fan. Tomorrow's game is a really big deal. And I would love to see Toronto win tomorrow because I would love to see two more games for sure, because ain't nothing like 6 and 7 game series. Because you guys, go back a week ago.
Right.
That Philadelphia-Toronto series, that's one of the greatest things I've seen as an announcer. I mean, that was unbelievable. That shot Kawhi hit, that was one of the greatest things I've been a part of. And I'm so glad we had that game. It was crazy.
With Charles Barkley, before we let you go, I got to ask you about this Magic Johnson stuff. I don't know how close you are with Magic. I know you know him and you've known him for a long time, but he's on ESPN today and he was calling out Rob Pelinka, the GM of the Lakers, and saying that he was backstabbing him and taking shots at him. And he took a pretty healthy run at the Lakers. What's your read on the Lakers in general, Magic, him pulling the pin the way that he did on that job, and now how he's decided to kind of reveal his truth that just happens to be on the same day that they announced officially Frank Vogel as the new head coach?
Well, I think he probably did it intentionally. If I was the Lakers, I would probably wouldn't announce it the same day. Listen, it's so funny you bring that up because, you know, I know anytime something bad in the NBA happens, my phone starts going crazy. So I was just laying around this morning getting some notes, looking at the Golden State. I had to talk about that a little bit. That series is over. And then my phone about 10:15, something around, starts going crazy. So I don't, obviously, we're not getting first take. So I have to go and start reading about this stuff. And I'm going to tell you something. I was shocked and surprised that Magic burned down the whole house. He didn't burn down a bathroom or a kitchen. He burned down the entire house. And I hate that. I would love, I ain't going to lie, I would love to be around watching TV all day today because I can tell you that some of the stuff he said was, he was really angry, disappointed. And like I said, he left no stone unturned. And I would love to be, in the States and watching all the stuff that's being said, all the journalists giving their opinion because, man, Magic left no stone unturned. And I actually was surprised. I'm not going to lie. And what I mean by that is, listen, Magic is arguably the greatest Laker ever. And I think right now, it's not going to be comfortable for him going back in that building. You know? I mean, think about that. I mean, when he goes back in that building, he can't just run up to Jenny and Rob and say hello like everything is good and happy-go-lucky. So I think that was the part that surprised me the most because some of the stuff he said, it was personal, it was probably unforgivable. And like I say, that's the thing that surprised me the most, how he's going to go back in that building. Because like I say, anytime you've been to a Lakers game the last 20, 30 years, Magic Johnson was there, and everybody loved him. But after some of that stuff he said today, I think it's going to be very interesting how it worked out when he goes back in that building. Because he can't walk up to Rob and Jeannie and act like everything's fine.
Yeah. Well, our guy Jeff O'Neill here claims that he has been in golf tournaments with you in the past. And
one tournament a year, the Jimmy V.
And you would host a karaoke party on a Sunday night. Is that still going on or what?
Well, they canceled the Jimmy V. They screwed the tournament up and they started trying to make it. It was like the greatest weekend ever. We had the best celebrities in the world. And then they screwed around and took it to Pinehurst, trying to make it like a golf event. And we're like, yo, man, we're not here to play golf. We're here to have a great weekend and play golf.
Yeah.
And like I say, most of the celebrities weren't good enough to play at Pinehurst. So we had like a 20-year run where it was like the second best tournament of the year after Lake Tahoe for celebrities. And they screwed it up, and now it doesn't exist anymore. But to answer your original question, I don't want to brag about myself too much, but I'm probably the greatest living karaoke singer still alive today.
We got to get you in studio and challenge that, man. We can bring
that character, Gary Busey, he had a tough night at the karaoke one year.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I do remember it well. I mean, first of all, how are you going to forget that? But let me tell you this. I love karaoke. I only sing Frank Sinatra. I got to admit that. They all call me Old Ground Eyes. But I love karaoke. I love karaoke, so I got that covered. But I do. I love karaoke. But you know what? People make fun of my golf swing. I used to be a really good golfer. And I made the really stupid mistake of trying to get better. And I ended up taking lessons from every person, every man, every woman who ever lived. And now I got so many swing throws going through my big old head, I have no idea what's going to happen when I get over the golf ball. I mean, I used to break 80 all the time back in the day.
That's what we heard.
Yeah. I used to be a 7-8 handicap. And I was like, okay, let me get better. Instead of just being happy, drinking some beer, smoking some stogies, shooting 78 to 84, which I did pretty much every day for 10 years, I said, let me start taking lessons. Like I say, I started taking lessons from every Tom, Dick, and Harry. And now, like I say, when I'm over the golf ball, I got at least 20 golf coaches saying something to me at the same time. And I got no idea where the hell the ball's going to go.
So why do you keep playing? Do you still enjoy it? Or?
Well, listen, when you get old, what else are you going to do when you get old? I play golf and I fish. There's not a lot you can do when you get old. I mean, I'm 56 years old. I mean, I love being out there. One of the things, listen, walking 18 holes of golf on some beautiful land, shooting the crap with three of your guy friends, smoking some stogies, drinking some beer, that's a perfect way to spend 5 hours a day during the summer when you got nothing else to do. And I love to do it. I mean, listen, if I worried about how well I play golf, come on, I wouldn't play. But I love being out there with three guys, and we have a blast. Like I say, I'm smoking my stogies. I'm drinking some beer. And golf got – I mean, you know, you guys. You're going to see the most beautiful golf course in the world up here. You know, Wayne Gretzky, before he got cheap and killed his golf tournament up in Collingswood, that was one of the highlights of my summer. Because that place, the little village up in Collingswood.
Oh, yeah. Collingswood, yeah, it's a great spot.
There.
Oh. Yeah, it's outstanding.
You live there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. When Wayne used to have his golf tournament up there, that was the first thing we put on our schedule during the summer, was to come up to Toronto and Collingswood for a week, and it was amazing. You know, Wayne got cheap and don't do it anymore, so forget him.
Yeah, that's uncalled for.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable. Maybe the O-Dog, you can relaunch that golf tournament.
I will.
We'll reach out to you.
Hey, if you relaunch that golf tournament, count me in.
You got it. Well, enjoy your time in Toronto, and we really appreciate you doing this for us today.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me. Go Raptors tomorrow.
You got it. There he is, Charles Barkley. The great Charles Barkley.
Yeah.
Karaoke, only Sinatra, Charles Barkley.
Loves Gary Busey right. Just had a tough go of it.
Gary Busey.
I don't know what happened to Gary or Jerry Busey. I was walking in, and Jerry was being carried out. And it was gonzo time.
It was like Hannibal Lecter type routine, like
yeah, it was
Bernie Lomax. Well, he like something's
yeah, he had
something's
issues.
Going
He's
on.
He's got
with
something
Gary,
going.
But
it wasn't he on Entourage?
Yeah, he was, and he would just terrorize Turtle because
yeah, but like he seems like
Turtle.
A bit of a scary person.
I don't
I think
it,
he's got some.
I didn't
stuff
think it was
going.
An act. Like I think they wrote the real Gary Busey into Entourage.
And just be like, hey, we'll invite this guy and see what he does.
Yeah. Like I don't
like him and Mickey Rourke are the two like, you know, real unique. Let's call them unique people in Hollywood. Like Mickey Rourke,
well, he's like into boxing, but like legitimately boxing.
But he got his ass kicked, I believe, like by real boxers.
Right.
But Rourke is tough.
But like certified
but, like,
boxing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but I think what was the name of that movie that Mickey Rourke was in? The Wrestler.
The Wrestler.
Yeah.
Well, I told you the story
movie,
about like that. I told you the story a few months ago where I lost my job. And I went to see The Wrestler that
That's
night.
Right.
I've never been in a darker place in my life.
You got fired, and that night you saw The Wrestler?
That day, I got gassed that day, and that night I went to see The Wrestler. And
Can I ask you something? What did you get fired for? Don't tell me, like, cuts.
No, I didn't get technically fired. I got laid off.
Yeah, it was but
that's fired. I'm sorry.
Basically,
that's
because they could have picked somebody else, and they said, this is the
so
guy who's
gone. You got the old, it's a numbers game?
They told me it was the numbers game. It was the economy was sinking in 2008 or whatever, but I wasn't making any money, so it wasn't the economy.
Restructuring.
They immediately replaced my money and my job
with
like two or three different people and added to the budget. Like it was basically an opportunity to get rid of me.
Did you know that you were doing? Were you doing?
I had no idea I was getting.
No, but were you doing things where you're like,
no.
Were you lazy? Were you late? Were you?
No, I thought I was kind of on the up and up and doing my thing. Like the guy who ran the operation, I guess he didn't like me. I didn't know that. I thought, you know, I was in his good books or whatever.
Well, now you're the host.
That's the thing.
Do you ever do you want to go up and give them the how do you like them apples?
Well, honestly,
my own show. How do you like them apples?
I'll be honest. I was jaded and bitter for a long time. Like, really hated the guy and hated the
like
situation.
Yeah.
But now I look back on it, it's the greatest thing that ever happened to me. Because I wouldn't be here today if I didn't get the pink slip.
Exactly.
You'd probably owe the guy, you know. And quite frankly, he gave me an opportunity. He had never met me before in his life. Yeah. He didn't need to give me an opportunity. So as much as it sucked that he let me go in the end, the fact that he gave me the handshake to start on day one.
Stepping stone, exactly.
I was lucky to begin with. He had no reason to give me a job.
I don't want to hear him.
Screw that guy.
I don't want to hear him taking credit for your success, though.
I don't think he'd do that.
Well, I feel like, oh, yeah, I gave Brian Hayes his first job. Like, I could feel him being a dink like that.
No, I don't see that. I think he'd, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know what kind of reaction he would have.
In a hero moment, like, oh, I've listened to that show.
I knew he had some talent, and I saw it coming.
His first job, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
I feel like he could do that.
It happens to everyone. At some point, you got to walk the plank.
I agree.
What I would suggest is when you get let go, don't go to see The Wrestler.
Yes.
Because it is a dark, depressing movie.
So those two in Hollywood, I think, are the most... Well, Nick Cage has got to be in there right now. He's kind of...
Yeah, Nicolas Cage is... There's a lot
but
in
this
Hollywood.
Gary Busey. This guy
he had
is...
He had a big night.
He's got some stuff going on.
All right. And by the way, I loved when Charles said they had the best celebrities ever at that golf tournament.
Yeah.
Him and Michael Jordan. No one cared about anyone else.
Isn't that where
there was Ronnie Francis, Rod Brindamore, Glenn Wesley, Bates, like all the Hurricane, but it was like some basketball coaches from like...
North Carolina State or something.
Blah, blah, blah. Darius Rucker was there. Dave Coulier was there. It was Charles Barkley, Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Was it in Carolina?
Right in Raleigh.
That would be fun.
Was it a decent track?
It was amazing. It was one of the best tournaments ever. It was the most fun, best parties, after parties.
When did Gretzky pull the pin on his tournament? He used to host that up in Collingswood all the time.
I don't think it was Wayne Gretzky. He just had his name on that web.com tour, and they had it up in Collingswood. I don't think it's Gretzky that pulled the pin on it before Gretzky got cheap. It's like the web.com went up there and said, "Do you want to be the host?" It's not like Gretz called up web.com and said,
"I'm out."
Yeah. What about getting cheap? As if Gretz is forking out money for the tournament. Yeah, I'll come up there and give you a couple mil.
I thought it was like just a charity event, like the way he was describing it. But it was like a pro-am, is what you're saying.
It was an actual tournament.
I see.
Didn't Grant Fear
It was
go
like
to that?
The AT&T Pebble Beach, but.
Because I remember it used to be televised all the time. And Gretzky would always do the rounds, and he'd be in town. And
it is tough, though, if you put your name on something and it's there yearly. Like, that's a...
Well, especially if you don't live here.
Yeah, it's
like Gretzky doesn't live here.
You know, like, you got to lock that into your schedule.
Right.
Every year. Like, I'm sure it gets old.
Thanks again to Charles Barkley.
Yeah, good job, Grappler.
Shout out
to our Graps.
The Grappler grappled him at Scotiabank yesterday.
The Grappler has been... The Gretzky of producers thus far.
So far, he's...
I would say the bar is a little bit too high. This is not the way you want to start a new gig.
Exactly.
You got to start slow and ease into it.
It's got to be a slow build.
Right.
This guy's
on fire. Shout out to the Grappler.
In July, you're going to get nothing.
Marles Narkley in July.
Dave Pullen's coming up. He'll be in studio. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Dave Pullen, our TSN hockey analyst, but more importantly, our good buddy in studio. What's up, Pooley?
Well, you know, I was just caught the tail end of your last guest, who I crossed paths with early in his time in Philadelphia, and my time as well. I mean, so the Sixers had won the NBA championship in 83, but they had the fifth pick in the draft in 84. They made some deal, right? So Barkley was tearing it up at Auburn. He was the round mound to rebound. So they brought him in before the draft, secretly, and the owner at that time had a basketball court in his house. So they did it all covertly. They brought him in, you know, as a big secret. And they told him, "You got to lose 10 pounds before the draft." He was 3'10". At 6'4 and a half. And Charles famously said, "I went home and ate everything in sight. I did not want to go to Philly." So when they brought him in, that was Pat Croce's project. He was our conditioning coach and the Sixers conditioning coach.
Right.
And I would, if you'd have brought that name up to Charles, Pat Croce, he made him the professional that he was. Because he was just an incredibly talented, great big kid, you know, who had no idea what he could be.
Hall of Famer.
Win the rebounding championship at 6'4 and a half is crazy. Like, it's crazy. Even when you see him on the set beside Shaq, you're like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 6'4" and a half doesn't make you stick out necessarily.
He seems
it's right
a
on
lot
the
bigger,
like. Yeah, like he does.
Maybe it's because yeah. he is a wide guy.
He is
guy.
Bigger
like,
now.
He seems like yeah. like I. If I'm shocked that you said that he's 6'4". Yeah. Yeah. Like I would think that he's 6'7", 6'8". Mm-hmm. That's when in my mind I think most basketball players are that.
He might
that
list
big.
Himself at 6'6". I don't even think he does. I think he lists himself openly as what he was.
No point now.
Yeah.
I mean, who
now
are you
it's even
to
better,
fool?
Right?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Exactly. Now you want to go south.
He was
yeah.
funny though, and so in our morning workout group we had a number of guys, depending on what exactly was happening, but Dr. J was part of it, the end of his career, and Mike Schmidt. But Daryl Stanley and Dave Brown came in when they were rookies, right?
Yeah.
And Daryl Stanley would take his teeth out and put them on the music so Charles wouldn't change the music because he couldn't get through the teeth to change the music.
Right. Oh, that's funny. Was that common practice to stay in Philly, like during the offseason?
I did. Philly was one of the first teams to have an off-season camp for young guys and bring them in, and they were ahead of their time and doing things that are normal now. You know, it used to be you just went home. I just lived in the city I played in, and Dr. J did as well. Mike Schmidt would train in season. So he'd train in the morning and play in a baseball game that night.
Really?
Yeah, which was crazy. And he won the MVP at 30.
Yeah, it was
5 years
he was
old.
In good and shape. For then it was
phenomenal.
Really
phenomenal
old.
Shape.
Phenomenal.
Right.
Like I remember him, but like I don't remember how if he was put together.
He
or
was.
Anything.
He was really. He wasn't overly big, but he was really, really ripped and really like he loved the conditioning part of it and was just getting to baseball.
Yeah.
And he was ahead of his time, and he literally, I think he was 35 or 36 when he won the MVP. So it was a unique morning group, and so if you were doing say sit-up reps and you're doing 60 of one exercise, Charles would have to count his 10 out, right? So, if he fell somewhere in the 40 to 50 range or the 50 to 60 range.
Wow. You got to keep him honest.
Absolutely.
You got to stay on top of these guys.
Absolutely.
Dave Pullen in studio. Today, big anniversary in the city. 4 years ago today, Mike Babcock was hired. I read that this morning. How would you characterize that run so far? 4 years with Babcock.
In progress.
Yeah.
In progress. I think the whole time factor of this is, you know, one of the things I said when I was in a management position there was, I hope we have enough time. I used to say it internally and externally. I hope we get enough time. It just, you know.
Happens quick.
But it happens quick, and you don't know what the timing is of the build and where the build is coming. And this year is throwing it. I don't even know how you build a team now compared to the conventional way. Like, I think a person that's going to turn a team around pretty quickly on this whole, you know, maybe Vegas-like or Carolina-like runs of the last couple of years, it's Kenny Holland.
Yeah, I mean,
like, I think he is. He's got all the experience. He's got all the. He'll get out from under some of those contracts.
Yeah, he's got to work his magic. He's just got to tell the owner to kind of take a step back and give me a blank check. But, you know, getting back to Babcock, that's interesting. 4 years. Like that has happened quick.
It's flown
and
by.
We were on this show.
Tracking
I remember, like,
flights.
Came there in was here. There was people, yeah, Maple Leaf Hot Stove, and people were
where the
like
plane
sending
was.
Us notes. Like, there's a MLS plane in Detroit, and tracking it. It seems like it's gone quick, but what's his deal? 6 years or eight?
It's an 8-year deal. It's only at the halfway mark.
But he's halfway. Like, I would say this, and this is no more pressure than Mike's already has. But the next couple years are very crucial for him, for them. Like he already, I believe, we've talked about this, he's on the clock.
He's on the clock.
I think after this playoff run, people started to, I don't want to say the luster came off of Mike a little bit, but you know, people are starting, this is the first year that I've been kind of from on the outside watching, challenging some decisions.
Well, if you don't win, that's what happens. It doesn't matter.
When he first
who you
got
are.
Here, he was the winner, and it was almost like he couldn't be challenged because he would just look at people and say, "You got to dig in. That's what winning's all about." And everyone in Toronto was like, "Oh, he must know because no one's done it around here, so we can't question him."
Right.
Right.
Which is ridiculous, but that's the way it was.
Well, that's the way it was. I think this is a prime example of how the goalpost it moves
right.
as the time goes on. Because I think if we were to go back 4 years ago today. And we were to tell any Maple Leaf fan, let's not forget, he took over before the tank.
Right.
Like,
right.
they tanked his first year. He took over before the tank.
But
he
it was
took
a double over, tank. They took over.
He took over for Horacek and Carlisle.
And Horacek had tanked. They had tanked.
But it was
massively that year.
Right. right. But that was not a planned tank. That right. was the wheels have fallen off, and this is a disaster. If you went back 4 years ago and said, they're going to make the playoffs 3 of the next 4 years, they're going to have north of 100 points two of the next 4 years. You would have said it was a resounding success.
Would you ask the next question about had they won a playoff round?
Well, that's where the goalpost all of a sudden starts.
See, the hard part here is, Brian, is that how does this get easier over the next 2 years? Like, I think Tampa Bay is going to be lit next year coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they will.
Motivated as any team you can think of.
We were talking about it. Even if Boston wins the Cup, heading into the regular season, not the playoffs, couldn't you see Tampa winning the East again?
Absolutely.
I think they're the favorite, regardless of what happens.
Hungry, and they're going to
be hungry. Yeah. Now they've got some issues to sort out too. Like mm-hmm. Braden Point's not just going to sign for $850,000.
Right.
Like they're going to have some moving parts, but you know, on paper they're
and there's a different guy moving the parts.
Yes, exactly.
That's a significant.
Like Yzerman is not there as a consultant anymore. Like, this is all on Julian Brisebois.
But he's got a pretty decent blueprint.
No, he does. Right. There's no question. Like, the amazing thing about Stevie Yzerman was what he managed to do in a tough situation with a Jonathan Drouin, with a Martin Saint-Louis. Like, he seemed to maneuver out of really tough situations and come back with a lot of stuff.
Didn't he not choose Marty Saint-Louis for the Olympic team?
2014, exactly. Yeah.
That was his player.
Exactly.
That's pretty tough.
Oh.
But didn't he ultimately go because of an injury?
Yeah, he did.
He did.
And I think it was Stamkos who was injured.
Yeah, the leg.
Oh, no, it was Tavares broke his leg, right?
No, he
was already there when he
broke
did
his
that.
Leg at right, the right, tournament. Right, 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 I think right, it was right. It was Stamkos.
Stamkos had like some medical thing where at the right. last minute they said, we're not letting you go.
Right. Wasn't it that clot? He had a clot. Didn't.
I think it was when he broke his leg in Boston, and then he was hoping to rehab in time, and I don't think he could make it back. But which coach in this division, the Atlantic Division, do you think has the most pressure on them to succeed next year?
Mike Babcock.
More so than John Cooper?
Well, that's just they're both in the same boat playoffs. It's about playoffs. Yeah, they're both going to make the playoffs.
Right. I think they are for sure, but
you're right. Like, I would say people in this market say it's Babcock because of what they haven't won a playoff round. So they're Tampa's at least had some success. They've won rounds and
they've gone to the finals.
And both coaches are the teams. The teams are not in a position where you're going to be like, well, you know, he's probably got 20 games, and if it doesn't go well, they're talented enough where I don't think that's going to be a situation.
Their judgment is coming in April and further next year.
Like, could you see Toronto or Tampa being in trouble 20 games in?
No.
Where they were waiting, and there's, okay, pull the plug on that guy.
No, not at all. The only thing, and I think it'll be addressed this summer, is the backup goaltender. If Freddie comes back and doesn't have a great season or gets injured or something, and
like the 1 year Lavi in Philly, he was under the gun. He lasted three games.
Yeah,
and
said, never. That's this. Not a chance. To
three, I think it was.
Yeah.
Denny Savard was four in Chicago when Quenneville took over.
Right.
Three is pretty tough.
Yeah. Like, no. Both of those guys would be on the chopping block after if there was an early exit again next year for either one of them.
But think about the coaches in this division. That's a pretty high-profile group of coaches. Like, Florida's going to be better.
Boy, you might have Patrick Waugh in the division.
Florida's going to be better. Yeah. Cassidy.
He's a fantastic coach.
I wasn't a huge Butch Cassidy fan his first time through when he was with Washington. He was a young guy, and then he went down, and he redid it. He re-earned his Spurs in the American Hockey League. He's a really good coach now. And then you got Claude Julien, and you got Babcock.
Right. Cooper.
And you got Coop. It's a pretty heavy.
Well, yeah.
Are you buying this Patrick Waugh stuff in Ottawa?
I actually think it would be a good hire if they ended up doing it. And the only reason being is I think Patrick has enough. I don't know what the word like balls. If Eugene Melnyk wants to, you know, mess around a little, not mess around. I don't know what the wording would be, but
be involved.
I think Patrick's the guy would be like, no, I'm going to do it this way.
What was wrong with the job, the guy that went behind the bench?
Mark Crawford?
Yeah.
I think he did a fantastic job. And I believe that it's, I don't know, but it sounds like they want a veteran guy who's able to have a strong voice.
Why the hell would be Patrick Waugh over Mark Crawford?
I will say this.
Name value.
I think Pierre Dorion, it's at least smart to be interviewing. Sounds like he's interviewed six or seven guys.
Yes. Patrick was the seventh one. That was a surprise one. I'm not sure what he was waiting for because he wasn't working.
Yeah.
The thought was that he was waiting because the guy was coaching in the playoffs right now.
Right.
Everybody was speculating it was Brad Shaw, who was an Ottawa guy.
Right.
But he wasn't part of it. Rick Bonus went in on Thursday, I believe.
Yeah.
I thought the surprise was that Waugh wanted to coach again.
He coached this year in Quebec.
He hadn't coached.
He had a window of 2 years. He hadn't coached.
Yeah.
And then he actually sold the junior team in Quebec.
And somebody asked me this today, and I actually, has any of the shine come off of Patrick Waugh because of the way he exited Colorado?
Should have.
I said yes.
I think so. It was a bail job.
And didn't they put up 47 points that year?
He screwed over Bednar and that organization so badly. And, you know, at the time, people were like, well, he saw it coming. And then all of a sudden, the next year, they make the playoffs. And then the next year, they make the playoffs.
And they're climbing.
And they're climbing.
And Sakic, whether he had a plan, it's worked out so far. He's got some good young players to build around there. Right. But, yeah, I think the shine came off of Patrick just the way he exited. It's the way it sounded. We don't know.
We assume it was a power struggle. That's what we assume. We assume it was about personnel and if he's going into Ottawa, does he have some say in player personnel?
See, that would be another thing. You know, that's...
Well, I could see him selling Melnyk on that.
But
I don't know if he'd sell Dorion on it, but Melnyk might step in and say, I want you and you can get it.
But
yes.
You look at Ottawa's got some really good young pieces coming. It's just now you've got to...
You got to wait.
Let them grow. There is going to be some lean times there. But, man, they've got some fantastic players there. It's just how are you going to manage them up and shape the team around them?
We'll see.
Yep.
Pooley, good seeing you, buddy, as always.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen.
Thank you for joining us. There's Dave Pullen, our TSN hockey analyst. Jack Armstrong coming up in about 20 minutes. Scott Mitchell will join us from the park as well. Get more of an explanation on what was going on with the Blue Jays today. Vladdy Guerrero Jr. not in the lineup. And they got spanked 12-2 to the Red Sox. Overdrive continues TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, so I just saw this tweet. Michael Mulvihill, who's, a PR guy with Fox. He has the ratings for Game of Thrones last night.
Was that the last one?
Last one. That
what
was
happened?
The finale.
Did the dragon follow?
The dragon's off somewhere and no one knows where he went.
He dropped the little guy off at the Robin Tug, and he's all done. He blew up, lit on fire.
Basically, you got it. That was it. That was the episode.
Were you happy with it?
No, not really. It was okay. It was James Reimer in Detroit.
Just okay.
It was okay.
What the hell kind of show does that? They have a crappy final episode.
A lot of them do. The Sopranos finale was terrible. The Seinfeld finale was terrible.
Seinfeld left it open, though. I always felt like Seinfeld was going to have a movie or some sort of reunion. They just never did. Or did they?
No, they never. They did on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Remember, they did a full season on Curb.
But I feel like they. I felt like when they, you know, walked off the subway and just walked away, that they were going to pick it up like.
Well, they went to jail though. The final episode.
Oh, that's right.
Remember, they were all in the jail cell.
That's right. I thought that they walked off the subway.
No, that was the subway episode from season two or three. Anyway, whatever. 13.6 million live viewers last night. For the Game of Thrones finale. And the point this guy's making is that would rank 71st among all NFL games in live viewership last season. So as big as Game of Thrones is and was in this phenomenon, 71. That's where it would rank. 70 football games last year. 70. Right. Had a higher live rating than Game of Thrones last night.
Okay, so let's get back to the NFL and... their replay rules. Nobody cares.
Well, yeah, I guess you're right.
That was my only contrarian argument to you the other day about getting it right or the replay was that the NFL does it and they've modified it and people still watch.
You're right, but I think that can be a two-way street. You could get rid of it and people will still watch.
You're right.
You know, so you're not wrong.
Right.
But I think you could spin that both ways.
Oh, for sure.
Without review,
the NFL,
there's still that many
people.
You're
right. Like, guys could play with no pads, no nothing, and they'd still be watching.
It's too big to fail.
Yeah.
Like, the NFL is too big to fail. It's a different beast. That's why whenever you see hot takes, you see it every spring with the NBA.
Yeah.
Great NBA games, great moments online, and people write these pieces how the NFL is no longer America's game. It's the NBA's world, and we're just living in it.
And Cleveland and Buffalo playing are still beating that.
Monster. Cleveland, Buffalo on a Thursday night will do a bigger rating than the NBA Finals. Like,
that's crazy.
There's nothing close in the States.
It's pretty
nothing
cool.
close. Game of Thrones, again, a phenomenon. 70 games last year. wow. get a higher rating. 70. So how many? You get 16 primetime a week, 32 with the Thursday nighter, 48 if you go Thursday, Sunday, Monday. You got 48 primetime games.
Yeah.
More than that, because there's 17 weeks.
I'm just glad I don't have to read about it ever again.
Anyway.
Well, there were some hot takes last night on Twitter.
So
people
stupid.
Not happy.
No. No one's ever happy.
The dragon's
no one's ever
not
happy.
Dead.
All right. Jack Armstrong coming up. Scott Mitchell on what went down with the Jays and Vladdy today. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.